This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Roger Berry, retired veterinarian, Fielding's first resident veterinarian.
Okay.
And Pat Hennigan. Yeah, I've been a farmer all my life, retired to Fielding now, and I'm just here on behalf of the Coach House Museum.
Yep. And I'm Stuart Burks, just running the recorder. Okay, now, Roger, the issue of equipment on farms that have changed and probably made it easier to manage animals, would you say?
Certainly, yes. I can remember one of the first animals I went to on a farm up Mangoni Road, and the guy had a beast with what we used to call woody tongue or actinomycosis. And he had it in his sheep yards, and I said, well, where are the cattle yards? And he said, oh, I haven't got any cattle yards. So he and the next thing is, oh, well, I went and got a rope, you see. I thought, oh, I'll handle this thing somehow or other. And the cattle beast jumped out of the sheep yards, and I managed to lasso it, and it dragged the two of us down the hill, both hanging on to the other end of this rope, and down the hill it dragged us until it eventually sort of choked, I suppose, and I managed to stick an injection into it which would fix the woody tongue, and we let it get up, and that was made me realise how much time we were wasting because the farmer didn't have decent facilities. And then along came brucellosis vaccination to prevent abortion in cattle, and this involved beef cows as well as dairy cows, so the farmers had to get decent yards, and it certainly made a big difference to our work, yes.
Yeah, okay. Were there many injuries from animals then? Was it a dangerous occupation?
Well, it was. It could have been. I can remember I was out at a farm one day pregnancy testing some wild run cattle, and the bloke didn't... We had a cattle crush, but it wasn't too efficient, and when he put a bar in behind them, they had too much movement back and forth, and I walked up behind this animal to pregnancy test it, which we did by per rectum, and it went forward in the crush, lashed out with both back feet, caught me in the solar plexus, and I went down in the mud moaning and groaning. And the farmer thought I was dying, I think. Well, I wasn't too sure I wasn't either. But eventually I realised I'd just been winded, and so I got up and carried on. But there were occasions where the yards weren't very good, but they gradually improved, and mostly they've got very good facilities these days.
Yeah.
I was out at Pat's place one day when his father was there, and he had a bull that had been hit by a car and had a rip right down its side, and this bull got rather nasty and sort of broke out with a bale on its head, I think.
I think the bale my father had made himself, and it was just a simple pull-over lever.
Yeah.
And when you say a bale, it's not a bale of hay, you're talking about something different.
Head bale.
A head bale, which is made of what?
It was made of wood, the head bale, but it had a steel frame around it.
From your hands, it's a bit like a yoke that you put...
Well, it had to put its head through.
Yeah.
And I used to, I was about 11, frightened as hell,
yeah,
having to pull this thing over, you know, to lock it in.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, we got it finally in there, and my father mustn't have pinned the top.
Mm.
And anyway, this bull was going mad, lifted the gate off its hinges and took off out the front with this big gate round its neck. And I think they had to get it in again, didn't they?
I can't remember that, to be honest. I can, you know, that sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
About this.
But I know, it's horrible. Yeah. I had nightmares about it as a child, you know. But no, there'll be a lot of funny stories. I would say Roger could tell us, but
yeah. So what sort of hours did you work then? Were you on call? And
we were on call, yes. I suppose we were doing... I was going out early in the morning, coming home, you know, 10 o'clock at night sometimes. I can remember knocking on a door at Cheltenham one night about 10 o'clock on my way home, and a cocky met me in his pyjamas. And he said, it was just a cow with mastitis. He says, oh, come back tomorrow. He said, go home and go to bed. So I did. But we sort of had to try and get rid of all the jobs in one day. Otherwise, they piled up the next day, you know. And,
of course,
and most of them were fairly urgent anyway, really.
But the farmers would be, I mean, 10 o'clock at night for a farmer, would he have been up for... 4 or 5 the next morning for milking?
So
might not have been too welcome.
No, we worked long hours and didn't have much time to win. I'd played rugby for Victoria University, and we won the championship in 1946. I went to Sydney and was going to play rugby, and I found that I didn't have the time. We were actually boarding quite a way out, and the landlady wasn't very pleased with me getting home late from rugby practice, so I had to give it up. So I didn't play any rugby in Sydney. They did have an inter-faculty competition, and I used to play in that, but I came back to fielding, and at the end of the season in 1953, they were shorter players, and they took me into... I'd got to know Jack Gleeson fairly well, and they took me into playing a few games for them, which I did. And the next year, 54, I thought, well, I'm going to have one good season of... You know, I'd missed the best years of my rugby over in Sydney, and about game 5 I got a kick in the head and fractured cheekbone and had a few days in hospital, and the vet club employers and the vet, senior vet weren't very happy because I was the only one in fielding, so I just had to chuck it in. So that was the end of my rugby. I don't know how I got onto rugby.
But now they've got a lot of small animal vets down here, haven't they?
Yes.
The local, you know, I don't know how many small animal vets would there be down here now in fielding, probably up to half a dozen.
I suppose there is. Yeah, we had a girl we appointed at one stage to do small animals, but we used to fill in... Each veterinarian had to do a day filling in, you know. The small animal work has increased tremendously, and people are so willing to spend. Well, I don't know if they want to spend, but they do. They're willing to spend an enormous amount of money on their pets.
Because it's not subsidised the way that human health is it?
No. But, you know, I had to visit the dentist recently, and I had a filling, or a thing that they could have done with a filling, but the previous dentist had, I'd been going each year to have it checked, and he said there was nothing wrong with it, you know, there was a bit of a hole there, but not causing any bother. And I went there, and this girl said, oh, you've got three fillings you need doing, and she didn't really take me into consideration at all. It was just to get the money, you know.
Yeah,
and that's become...
You know, if we don't fill it now, in another 30 years, it might be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. That's what I thought.
I've found something similar, but it's partly maybe the younger dentist.
You still got that on?
This is recording, yeah. Oh. But the trainer, the equipment is different as well. I find now if they think they'll either drill or replace an old filling or something like that, there's no need for the injections against it. The drills are so much faster and so on, and it's very quick, so they're doing maybe more things that would have just been left in the past. I don't know if that's good or not. The price is certainly a lot more.
Well, I said to this girl, she said, oh, you've got three fillings you need doing, and I said, you know, I'm 92. What the hell? Unless it's causing me any bother.
Yeah. And the fact at a guess, you've got most of your teeth still?
No. False teeth on the top.
Because I know you'd be the generation where sometime either there's someone coming up to 21 or as a wedding present, they would have said, oh, well, we'll have all your teeth out. Yeah, false teeth.
Well, you know, when we were in Sydney, we couldn't afford much. The cheapest treatment was yanked them out, so that's what happened.
Yeah.
Of course, nowadays they try and save them all the time, don't they?
They do. Try and preserve them.
Okay.
At your cost.
Now, you were saying to get back to the vet practice, work hours, you'd start early, you'd finish very late. Were you working weekends as well? Even though there was at that stage there was the New Zealand weekend, which was almost...
We worked weekends. We had to work every second weekend when there was two of us here.
Okay.
And you see, we had to cover the whole district, and once or twice I can remember going up to Rangawahi, and I had a little old Bedford van. Come home, another call at Rangawahi, you know.
So how far would that be in your van? How long would it
about
take?
About an hour away, over metal roads, and it was. And then the exchanges were marvellous, really. The girls at Kimbolton, they used to monitor us if we went through the village, and they'd relay messages, and they were good. If I was going to do a run of vaccinating on different properties in Kimbolton, you'd give the girl a list, and she'd ring these people and tell them what time are you going to be there. And they were good, those girls. And then of course we got radio telephones, which was
a
marvellous thing, really, as far as we were concerned.
But you also mentioned, though, that your wife, who wasn't employed, but she would, was that early on people would phone your home? And
a lot of them phoned it. Night time. After office hours,
Okay. So in your practice, did you have a sort of office administrator or receptionist?
Yes, we had numerous girls. The girl we had last year, the uni, she was excellent. She ran more or less
the whole show. She was there for quite a few years, wasn't she?
And she knew what was going on. She was a daughter of a dairy farmer, so we had, as the practice increased, we had other girls who were nurses, you know, and we employed two or three girls in the clinic permanently. As we expanded in the small animal field,
Okay, so they'd be treating animals themselves?
Or? Yeah. Well, under our direction, yeah.
Okay. Mm. Okay. And so...
Is that your phone?
Yeah. Had to get something we could hear, probably.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. I'll cut that bit out.
Yeah.
So if you're working those sorts of long hours, what did that interfere with social life?
Well, I suppose it did. It did, really. Yeah. Couldn't have not. We still had a bit of social life. We had enough. We were keen to work. That was our job, and that was what we were employed to do, and that's what we wanted to do, you know. And then... Then of course we had children coming along, so we couldn't go out that much anyway, really.
Yeah. Okay. So what were activities have changed a lot now, but I think was it in your early working days where you joined one or two associations or a local church and the activities around that? Or?
Yeah, we were great church guys. I played cricket for the Fielding Football Club cricket team when I was, and I was able to play cricket. I got called away a few times, but I was able to play a bit of cricket. Enjoyed that. Mm. And the team I played for was in those days, Fielding used to have their own competition. Mm. There were about half a dozen teams around the district here that played its own competition, and I used to play for Fielding Football Club team, and it was quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I could play cricket. Occasionally I got called away to do a job, but mostly it wasn't too bad on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I'd have every second Saturday. Yeah.
And were you involved more in the rural type social activities, the schools with pet and calf day and things like that? Or?
Yes, we were involved. Our wives usually got called in to do the judging with pets and things.
Well, your wives did the judging?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was involved with the setting up of the squash club in Fielding too. That was quite a major project. We used to do a lot of... We applied to the Lotteries Commission for a grant, and they said, well, you've got to have a certain amount of money yourself to get the grant. So we used to go out, we painted the Reitzel roof, and we did lots of other painting jobs, we did gardening jobs for the Rose outfit.
What about picking up hay? Did you do picking
no,
up
No, we
hay?
Didn't do any picking up of hay, no, but we did quite a few jobs, local jobs, to get some money to be subsidised for the squash club.
Yeah. Nice. Was there a sort of town-country divide, or Fielding saw itself very much the rural town?
Yeah, I think it's... No, I don't think there was any... No real divide there, no. No. They had a big Queen Carnival when I was not long here. It was prior to 56 anyway, and that was very well patronised by the community, and they had Country Queen and Sports Queen and whatnot.
What about Manfield? There's Manfield here, is that?
Well, yeah, Manfield, I was involved with that, really. Robert Lester, who was one of the instigators of Manfield, he was president of the local car club or something, and he sold veterinary equipment, and he came to me one day and said, "Would I?" They'd made an application to set Manfield up, and there'd been a few objections, one of whom was Larry Evans, who used to have a cattle feed thing down Awahuri Road, and he backed on to Manfield, and he said it would badly influence his cattle, and so he was objecting, and they had a meeting at the Sampson, Manawatu District Council, it wasn't Manawatu in those days, it was Sampson, I think. But anyway, I had to appear before this committee as an expert witness, and they brought up the fact that Larry was saying he was going to interfere with his cattle, and I said, well, that's rubbish, really. The cattle, the dairy farms out at Ohaaki had been putting up with the noise there for years, and that made a scrap of difference to them.
Yeah.
So this wasn't going to make any difference to Larry's cattle. And so it was granted to set it up in Manawatu. So, yeah.
Mm.
And they're still going. They've got the Grand Prix next weekend, yeah. Mm.
Oh, yes, because some of them are practising today, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a Grand Prix. The Grand Prix's on next weekend.
Mm.
Now, there is something that quite a few people sort of your age or similar were saying was the issue in terms of social life. They say that the country hall dances, Newbury Hall dances and so on. Now, you went to university, you were studying several years in Sydney, then you came back here to a job, so you'd already be well into your 20s by the time you got here. Were you married when you came here?
No. No, I was single. I'd had a few offers of me, but I was, in those days, if you were in university, you got your degree out of the road first. We're not worried about anything else, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where I was. Nowadays, it's different. They live together or they get married while they're at university, mostly.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, no, I wasn't married. I was single. I didn't get married. I came here in 53, got married in 56. I was 30.
Hmm.
30 when I got married.
So, if you were working 10 hours a day, though, how did you manage to find someone to marry and have time to actually get to know each other?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well... Yeah, no, we had a bit of time off, I suppose. The girls used to go to the ANA, which was a dance hall in Palmerston North, where the...
It's huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, big place there. And they used to have a dance every Saturday night. I don't think I went very often, but I did go, and Jack Cleason. I went with Jack Cleason, and he introduced me to Doris, actually.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what started it off, and
Jack became an All Black selector. Fielding guy.
Yes, yeah, he was an All Black selector and manager here.
Mm.
They used to have the pub here, Empire Hotel.
Mm. Okay.
Country dances were a big thing in the old days, when I was growing up. New mention Newbury, that was always good.
Yeah. And there's some big local bands, weren't there, that would do the circuit.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah. But that ANA, had a band at each end.
Yeah?
Two bands playing.
Playing different music.
Well, we're all playing dancing type music, they were very, very good.
So what sort of dancing did you do? You had to know all the steps? You went and learnt the dances?
We were a bit rusty.
Yeah.
Was it one of those things with the women by one wall and the men at the other? And
mostly, yeah.
Those days.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, they had Gay Gordons and all these things that sort of mixed.
Oh, the mixing dances.
Yeah.
And the Maxina, that was quite a good one too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
And we used to, when we got the squash club going, we used to have an annual squash club dance. Yeah, that was good. That was great fun, really.
Yeah. But
yeah, it was mostly the sports clubs that had those sort of things, I think, in those days.
But you wouldn't have, weren't as many cars in those days as there are now, so
no.
I suppose even just getting together would be a bit harder than it is now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, there weren't as many cars, which was a good thing, really.
People are a lot more mobile nowadays, aren't they?
What about alcohol then? Was that something that... Did people drink a lot at these functions?
Yes, they did. Yes.
So it was quite a bit of the old flagons. Used to have the half-gallon jars.
Oh, yeah.
Old flagons. We used to have those in the back of the car.
Oh, hidden away, you mean?
Yeah.
You couldn't take them into the dance hall?
Go outside for a drink. You couldn't take them inside.
Don't admit too much now, Pat.
Oh, I know. I've had stories that the women who hid bottles of alcohol in their skirts.
They were good fun, the old country dancers.
What about smoking then? Was that pretty
Cool? Everybody smoked.
Yeah.
Do you smoke, Pat?
I don't, but I can remember going to I was in Colleton Young Farmers Club. And we used to be in the supper room there, and there's probably 40 members at least. And by the end of the evening, you could hardly see from up the other end of that room, you know. And I didn't really smoke, but your clothes would smell, stink. Yeah, everyone smoked, didn't they?
Well, they did. Yeah, my wife smoked. No, I smoked. I smoked everything from pipes to cigars.
Yes.
But then I wake up one morning was coughing, and I heard them say on the radio something about smoking, so I knocked off. That was in my 40s, when I was 40.
Yeah. Mm, gosh.
So that was it.
And cinema, was that a big thing?
Pardon?
The cinema. Going to the cinema. Because you wouldn't know you had radio, you didn't have TV for a long
time. I used to go to the cinema. There were two cinemas in Fielding. Yeah, we used to go to the cinema a bit. And then I got married in 1956, and I approached the vet club about some money to buy a house, and they said, well, they'd rather they bought the house and rented it to me, because if I moved on, they'd have a house for the next guy, you know.
Yeah.
And they bought the house we were looking at, so that was...
Okay.
And... suited us. It was reasonably cheap rental, you know.
So there wasn't then the feeling, and some people now would say that it's almost you should own your own house. Did you feel that?
Well, it wasn't as common in those days.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd have preferred to have owned our own home, I suppose, but we didn't have any money, of course, and the vet club were. Their rental were pretty cheap.
So it's gone through two phases, because now home ownership is dropping off, as it's harder for people
to
buy. Yeah,
the price of houses, isn't it?
So,
yes.
Which makes you wonder why it's so entrenched, the view that you should have your own...
We'd always thought we wanted a bit of land, and we'd been looking for ages, and we got able to buy 23 acres at Colleton, so we bought that. I said to my wife, you know, if we don't buy now, we'll never buy. And it was dear. It was top of the range, you know.
Is that part of Short Estate?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so we bought it, and that was the best thing we ever did. We should have bought a lot of that land, you know.
Yes.
So you lived on it? You built a house
there? We built a house there in 81,
yeah.
Yes.
And farmed it?
Farmed it,
with livestock?
We had sheep for a few years, and then we farmed. It was easier to farm cattle, as far as I was concerned. Trying to work, do vet work, and come home and look after the sheep. Although Doris did a lot of it.
Because cattle involve less work, do they, than sheep?
Oh, yeah. And then eventually we leased the land to our son-in-law, and he said he'd lease it provided we deer-fenced it. So we deer-fenced it.
Okay.
Or he and I did that ourselves.
Hmm.
and he ran deer.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.